Hello and welcome to Torn Sourcewell. My name is Elvis, and as always, I'm your host. All right, so this is going to be kind of a quick one. There's not a lot that I can talk about and not that much that I even read or watched. So let's just head on right in with some news topics and let's get this one out of the way first, which is the third week of this somehow still ongoing Comicsgate scandal that just seems to keep on sprouting new heads like some sort of annoying hydra. This week has the development of Tom King and Jai Lee getting into conflict that CG has once again pounced on as evidence that they're an oppressed resistance to a tyrannical publishing entity. What kickstarted all this was the discovery that Jai Lee had done a couple of covers for EBS's Cyberfrog, and Tom King went straight to Twitter to publicly denounce Jai Lee having any connection to his Rorschach Max series with doing variant covers as well, because he didn't want to be connected to anyone who had any sort of connection to Comicsgate and it made him uncomfortable, which is totally in his right. But what this led to was this weird exchange where Jai Lee has said, and we have no further evidence to contradict this, that he has very little social media presence and that he didn't know what Comicsgate was and what they have done. And this was only further complicated by King finding this out and going on Twitter to say that he and Lee have patched everything up and they're all good. Turns out that Lee has been going through an emotional time and that King and him definitely aren't good, and he felt personally attacked and all this kind of stuff. It definitely seems like something they should have worked out in private and with DC rather than air out in public like this, because now they open up a can of worms where there are people who believe King, believe Lee, think Lee is lying, think King is lying, think Lee is dumb, think King is dumb, think Lee is acting like an 8-year-old, think King is acting like an 8-year-old, or think King is racist. The latter of which I don't really believe anyone actually thinks, but is just being used as a dog whistle distraction tactic by Comicsgate because Lee just so happens to be Asian. And it's a tactic they've used a bunch of times. And it's ridiculous because they make those same sort of claims that people are using those tactics against them, so it's more like projecting on their part, but I'm getting off topic here. It's a mess, and we're all dumber just for having to see it happen. Personally, I feel like if Lee is lying, it won't be too long until we find out, because these guys can't keep this thing on the down low, or until EVS and pathetic mob fanboy War Council tries to take him down for distancing himself from the movement, in quotes. So, you know what? Hopefully this all quiets down and we can move on for lives, because any more time being spent on trying to decipher what Comicsgate is up to is time wasted. Also in news, we have the aftermath of Comic-Con at home, where we got a bunch of cool stuff, the most relevant of which is that we got a New Mutants panel where they are standing solid on the release date of the end of August, which is seeming like a pipe dream by now. But we also have some new announcements, like how Bill Sienkiewicz is going to be apparently doing a commentary track for an eventual home release, and that they ended the panel by releasing the full 2-minute opening of the movie, which looks pretty fine, all things considered. So I'm still very much anticipating this, something that I am hoping is at least a decent entry into the XCU. And finally, it seems that Jeff Loeb is a horrible racist, having lashed out and belittled Asian cast members on Daredevil. Honestly, really horrible and despicable, it really is. Anyway, let's move on to what I read this week. First off, and only, we have John Constantine, Hellblazer number 8, where we finally get the second half of this two-parter thriller from Cy Spurrier. And I just want to say that it was kind of well worth the wait. Now, that doesn't mean that it was as intense or as heart-wrenching as the first part. It kind of can't be. The first part was all the setup, all the buildup, and all the dramatic development, and it was done in a way that only Spurrier can do best. This second part is all about paying that off, and by necessity and structure, it can only do so in a very few select ways. In effect, what I'm saying, I guess, is that it's kind of predictable. It's nothing you haven't seen before and can't see coming from a mile away, yet it's off the back and to the credit of the first part that it's still really damn engaging to see play out. Last month's issue did this incredible job of making the reader feel invested and deeply enthralled in the terrible tragedy of the plot, of this wayward and horrifically depressing situation that this mermaid had found herself in. I can only think of a few comics where you want to see the catharsis play out as much as many readers do with this one. And so that's kind of all this leads to. It's nothing out of the box or too creative, but it's still very satisfying and very fulfilling. Maybe in a very base and bloodlusty kind of way, but sometimes that's enough. Sometimes that's all you want to see. And Spurrier is still killing it with this series and with this new arc of just random occurrences that I think old John is setting up. So overall, 2 thumbs up. Now moving on to what I watched this week. First off, we have Stargirl, episode 11, Shining Knight. And this was by far the worst episode of the show. And I'm going to be real clean and short about why. First off, it's called The Shining Knight, and Shining Knight is barely in the episode and basically influences and impacts nothing. Episode instead was almost entirely about the worst, most needless, and aggravating subplot of the entire season. 2. This subplot didn't even exist in the comic this is based off of. The only thing closest to it was something grounded in actual, relatable human emotion. But for some reason, they decided to give this one the same payoff the comic did its own version. Which, 3, robs it of all impact and value. We've spent a season of Courtney irritatingly believing Starman is her dad, despite all evidence to the contrary, and direct conflict to better, more entertaining, more engaging character threads. In the comics, she more believably just thinks her dad is a good guy who is simply too busy to spend time with her. She has this inflated, rose-colored vision of him, and when he finally comes around, she thinks the moon of him, only to be let down by his real, scummy nature. Here, in this show, by virtue of not even thinking that he was her dad and that her dad was Starman, the show has to flimsily build up a rapport and bond between the two that can't exist, and it fails to exist in this, in order to recreate that same beat where she's let down. Which it can't, it really can't. This episode shouldn't even exist, and it wouldn't exist if the show is better written and better thought out. It's honestly an insane disappointment, and it's something that really gets to the heart of why this show has all these flaws, because they're not really thinking through character motivations. They're just setting up the biggest, most dramatic melodrama that they can, you know, obviously imagine. And that's not the way to build a show that is sustainable or emotionally satisfying, because this wasn't. Overall, 2 thumbs down. Hope the 2-part finale can do better. And finally, we have Doom Patrol Season 2, Episode 7, Dumb Patrol. It only makes sense that the week after I praise the show for how it's been becoming more and more serialized as the season has gone on, that we get what is almost a back-to-basics formula adventure, where we have a central theme and gimmick at the core of the plot, and then, on the fringe, some ongoing threads. In that sense, it feels kind of out of place with the few episodes that came before it. There's nothing really here that necessitates the characters being stricken by dumb-inducing brain parasite tics. It's pure and simple wacky premise, straight out of season one. There's nothing that would have prevented the characters involved from going on their continuing solo character arcs, but it's still a fun distraction and reprieve. Matt Bomer in particular does a surprisingly excellent job playing such a thick-headed idiot. It's amazing. His earnest simple-mindedness is endearing and hilarious, and he plays the role pitch perfectly. Does this episode feel a bit wafting as a result? Yeah. The core plot is really just used to foreshadow and plant future seeds, which, like I said, could have been done in any other kind of facility. While Rita, Cliff, and Doc are the only ones who get substantial momentum, but even they feel a little bit more threadbare than usual. Still, it's a wonderfully entertaining episode, and it reminds you that for as much as season 2 has grown as a show, it's good that season 1 was delightful as well, because even an episode that's much more in that vein still knocks it out of the park. Overall, 1 thumb up, 1 thumb middle. Anyway, that's it for this week. Again, I didn't have time to ask for any questions this week, but I do want to announce that I'm still doing unboxings, and the new video for that should be up this weekend. So be on the lookout for that. I'm honestly having a lot of fun doing those. And I just want to say thank you to everyone out there who's ever sent a question, comment, or topic to the show. It means so much to me, and I'm just so humbled by that, and I'm just so grateful for all of you for listening. And I want to give a shout out to the cover artists for the show at DOTEMCE. Please check them out. They're amazing, and they deserve all the traction they can get. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great week, and see you again next time.